You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You are listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Chain of Command Part 1. I'm Sean from Timmins, Ontario, Canada.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Omaha, Nebraska, Douglas County. Or actually, I should say Omaha, Douglas County, Nebraska. How's everybody doing, Sean? My goodness.
It's been since like last February since we've spoken.
In 2018.
Yeah. 2018, February 2018. That's what Skype was telling me earlier.
It was a matter of time. It was only a matter of time before we had you back on. No. Ba-dum-bum. Iborg.
Was it Iborg?
Iborg, yes.
I don't remember. It's so long ago. It's like another lifetime.
It's interesting because now, you know, Admiral Necheyev still gives Picard the stink eye for not doing what he wanted to do with his pernicious program. Next time, you get an opportunity to commit genocide. Damn it, you better.
It's good advice for anybody.
Absolutely. Some days. So, tell me, Sean, how have you been?
That's quite a wide open question for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. But essentially, I've been okay. Still working away on my podcasts. Mm-hmm. Shameless plug alert, the Rusted Robot podcast, where we talk about geeky stuff, and the Soulforge podcast, where we talk about sex and love and dating and loss and all kinds of funny things.
Oh, now that... Okay, seriously, I hate to admit this, but like I said, I've been out of podcasts listening for almost 3 years, so I don't know that. Rusted Robot, I know. I know that Rusted Robot. But the Soul Forge, what's it? How do you spell it? Soulforge?
Podcast.com.
Ah. Of course I'm going to look that up, James. You knew I would. Okay.
Everybody should look it up and subscribe and follow on all the podcast apps.
Now, sometimes I mix up...
I will just point out here that I have just logged in. I've recently gone from an Android over to an iPhone.
Sorry.
For reasons that I don't think I should bore the listeners. But as a result, I have actually moved on to a different podcatcher. So, you know, it's the podcast app within iPhone. So I have just taken this opportunity to write you, Sean, a 5-star review for the Rusted Robot, and we should encourage all of our listeners to do so.
It's definitely appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, do that. Do that.
Okay. And check out soulforgepodcast.com.
It's a place of silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem. How can you have silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem in the same thing?
You're just going to have to listen to find out, Lou.
Okay, so Sean... That's you.
That is
guide
good.
You through the adventures of living. We all want to love and be loved. I do too, Sean. You love me. I love you. Is happiness possible? Let's find out together.
That's right. It's not as pretentious as it sounds.
No, that sounds good. And you're on episode 106. Where the hell have I been in life?
Missing out, buddy. Missing out.
So you started in July of 2017.
Correct.
With that one. That's good. Interesting. Maybe I'll put a little snippet of one of your shows in here.
You should. And you know what? Most of them are a half an hour or less, so they're in easy bite-sized chunks.
Excellent. I'll have my lawyers contact your lawyers for the right and the privilege to use snippets of your show. How's that?
Sounds great.
All right.
talking about time travel moments.
Yes.
If we could go back and witness certain historical events, not change them, not influence them, maybe not even be seen. Yes. Maybe just our consciousness goes back and can see something. Like, so we couldn't go back and kill Hitler and change the outcome of the entire civilization of humanity.
I still want to be born.
Right. Because I was thinking about that the other day. If we went back in time and killed Hitler, that so many things would change.
So many things.
The world would be totally different. We wouldn't learn our lessons. But
yes. So top three. What are the three things?
Top time travel moments that we could go back into history and witness.
And witness.
Well, I always thought I would like to see or be there during the Woodstock concert of 1969, just to see exactly what it was
just
like.
To see.
I guess I couldn't experience it because I'm not a physical human. I'm just maybe riding around in somebody's consciousness because we don't, you know, we can't actually be there and change events.
Would you want to be an invisible entity separate from everything so that you could just kind of float around and visit and so many things, or just be attached to one person and experience their one perspective?
That's good. I like that. So you could either just be a floating invisible drone camera
that just picks up on everything,
or you could go into people's consciousness, float in, float out, and experience what they experience for a moment in time. I would do the moment in time, like, I want to be what this guy's feeling right now. I'm going to go over here and be the guitarist for this band who is on the stage.
Now, I sometimes mix our guests up. Are you my paramedic?
No. That's another guy from Toronto or something.
Blair.
Blair. Okay, Blair. Never mind.
I'm the mailman.
You're the mailman. Really?
Yes.
James, do you want to take back that going postal thing?
No, it's appropriate.
No, oh, okay. Completely appropriate. Was that before the show started, though?
It might have been.
It might have been. But still, I don't think mailmen like that. I shouldn't say mailmen. Postal carriers.
I don't care. It's just a job. It's not who I am.
Good, good, good. All right. How many things of mace do you have on your belt?
Zero.
None?
Lou. Just to be clear here. Sean from Canada.
Mm-hmm. No angry dogs in Canada?
Yeah. We do have dog spray, but I don't carry it with me.
Oh. Oh, okay. I always see the postal carriers with 2-3 cans of maces if, you know, one or two isn't enough. But
I have never seen any person working for any delivery company carrying mace. Are you sure this isn't a joke?
No, it's true. We do have dog spray that we can carry with us if we wanted to. But by the time we pulled it out of our pouch, the dog would have bitten us already, so I don't bother.
Do you not have to worry about bears? Isn't that more of a concern?
We just had a bear talk last week, actually.
It must be awesome to work in a job where you actually have bear talks. It just sounds great.
Wow. Well, it was interesting, and I saw my first bear en route last year, so.
I'm glad we don't have that problem. Cool. Okay, now let's change the subject here. James!
Hello!
Somebody went around the world to go to a Lady Gaga concert.
I did, absolutely.
And then somebody said, why wouldn't you go around the world for a Lady Gaga concert?
Oh, I said that.
Hey, technically, two. I went to two Lady Gaga concerts.
Ooh, wow.
So here's the way it breaks down. My wife, I always say the wife, but I suppose there are more than one. So the wife was over in California a couple of weeks back at the Apple WWDC convention, which is where all these Apple nerds get together and talk about whatever is happening in that world. you might see kind of like an uptick in Apple-related stuff on the news. They announced that kind of like big PC that only cost like 15 grand, that kind of stuff. Mm. So she was out in San Jose for that, and the wife, so obviously she flew out from London over there, and on the way back, I said to her, I said, hey, why don't I get you tickets to Lady Gaga, who is currently resident in Vegas, at least... she actually probably isn't anymore. I think we got her on the last second to last weekend. Mm. And she said, yeah, that'd be great. And there are two shows that she does. She does like a pop show, and she does like a more of a kind of like, you know, Sinatra standards kind of show. Mm. And so I got her tickets. But better than that, because I am a romantic at heart, I flew out to meet her in Vegas without telling her that I was going to be there. So I met, her at the airport as she flew in from San Jose into Vegas. And by the way, the domestic airport at Vegas compared to the international airport at Vegas, it's like night and day. I was shocked by that. You know, Lou, if you flew into Vegas, you're not getting the experience of what actually a nice airport is. I was very surprised that there was such a big difference. Anyway, that's a tangent.
So you didn't go to McCarran?
No, you do, but basically there are two airports there. There's the international one and the domestic one.
Oh.
And the domestic one's like a hole. It's horrendous.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
It's just a bit worn out, it appears. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
So, I met up with the wife, met her at the airport, scared her to death. We spent 3 nights in Vegas, a couple of tour concerts, and then flew back to... pick up the children who had been left with my mum.
That's nice.
But so I've been around the world.
While you were in Las Vegas, did you have any chance to put on your poker face?
yes, I did. I did indeed.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it.
Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start. And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart.
No, actually, so here's the thing. On one of the nights, because like, you know, when I've been to Vegas now, this would have been the third time. I have no interest in gambling, and to me, it just seems. Actually, I have a slight interest in gambling. So the thing that I would do if I was forced into gambling, I do think roulette is relatively interesting, in the sense that it's a very binary decision that basically gives you pretty much 50-50 odds, or, you know, 47% odds. Right?
Sort of. I mean, on the outside things, like the red and the black, the...
Yeah, the that's
first,
what I mean.
Yeah, the first 18, the second 18, the first 12.
Yeah, so how much, how much money do you make if you put it all on red and red comes up? Is it like you double your money, or... Or what happens?
It's 2-1.
2-1. Yeah.
Two
so
to one, I'd read.
Yeah. I my understanding is that you basically have like a 47% chance of doubling your money, mm-hmm. And in my opinion, I would happily, if I had money to waste, I'd happily do a like, you know, a $5,000 on red, and then just see what happens. Because if it comes up, it's good, very good. If it goes down, it's obviously very bad. But that's really where my interest ends. I have no interest in pretending that there's any skill in what fundamentally is just a random game. So I think I acknowledge roulette has been a coin toss, and it's mildly interesting, but anything beyond that, it just seems silly. Anyway, so the wife also shares my opinion, but she was interested in seeing if she could do any gambling, and she put like $1 into the slot machine, she pressed the button, and then that was it. And then we basically got bored and left.
Okay. Hey, I was wrong about that. The red, middle one, not the outside ones are 2-1, but the red and black are 1-1.
So, what do you mean?
1-1. So if you put $1,000 down, you'll win $1,000.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, I mean, in addition to your stake, right? So you double your money.
Right, right. You'll get 1,000.
That's how I interpreted it. Sorry. That's how I interpreted.
Okay. So however,
it's basically a coin toss.
Right. So however, there are two other things you can do for 2-to-1, and that's the first column, second column, and third column. And as you see in the roulette canvas, it goes from like 1, 4, 7, 10, and so on, and down that column. That's 2-to-1. Or there's also the first dozen, 1 through 12, that's 2-to-1. 13 to 24 is 2-to-1. 25 to 36 is 2-to-1. Now, if you get that on there, you're good. You're good, 2-to-1. Of course, you're not including 0 or double 0, so that sometimes kills people. However...
Yeah, but fundamentally, what all you're saying there, right, is that you take 50% of the outcomes and you're able to double your money, or you take a third of the outcomes and you're able to triple your money. Mm. Those odds are still exactly the same. You know, obviously up to the double zero and, you know, the green ones that cause a problem. But but fundamentally, it's just you're just rolling a dice, or you're just flipping a coin. It's nothing more than that.
That's all it is. So I came up with an idea. I didn't come up with it. I did come up with it, but it's a stupid idea. There are 36 numbers, okay? Actually, 38 when you include a 0, 0, 0. They pay out 35 to 1. If you put down on one number, let's say it's 16, and 16 comes up, you win 35 to 1. So I thought, I'll put one down on 34 numbers. 34 numbers. What are the odds that out of the four numbers left over, one of those will be picked?
Well, now, it's four over the number of total number of numbers.
I guess four out of 38. That's pretty good odds, I think, at least. It seems like it's good odds. And I was winning. I won the first four or five out of that. So I was up $5 because I get one. I get 30. They take my 33. They give me 35. I've won one out of it, whatever. I did that four or five times, and then on the fifth or sixth one, double zero hit, lost all 34.
Right.
Now, that's a bitter way to make money. But I thought, you can't lose. What are the odds at four? You're going to put them on the wrong four. Well, guess what? They're better than you think.
Well, hang on. No, just to be very clear here. If there are like 38 things around the roulette and you don't choose four of them, the chances of four of one of those four coming up, it's 4 over 38, which is over 10%. So it's not...
Not crazy.
I think the term "can't lose" here is somewhat being used in an inaccurate sense. All of the bets you can make on a roulette wheel, on average, lose you money.
Mm-hmm. Everything will lose you money. That's the house edge. Over a certain amount of time, no matter how much you win, they will get their money back eventually. So, okay. So,
anyway, it doesn't matter.
Let's move on.
Let's talk Star Trek, guys.
Yeah, hey, let's do that. But however, you guys did get my email. One of our listeners, Renee Roberts, no relation to the doctor there, who, by the way, is Brian Dunmore's groupie. We used to talk about that in the Lou Trek Show days of how come I don't have a groupie, but he does. One of her friends died a year ago, and he was coming up to the anniversary, and she wanted to kind of do a shout out for him. He died due to complications during a treatment for an acute myelodysplastic syndrome, and I've never heard of such a thing. So I'm going to put a link to information about that, as well as a Dropbox of their shows that they used to do comments on DS9 every Saturday night, even from his hospital, she says. So I could have read what she wanted me to say, but I thought it was better for her to do it in her own words and in her voice. I thought it'd be nicer. So I'm going to pop that in right here.
Sorry, I've never told you. All I wanted to say. And now it's too late to hold you.
Hi, guys. Just over a year ago, I lost my very dear friend Matthias to complications during treatment for an acute myelodysplastic syndrome. I'm including a link in the email so you can find out more about that if you like. Up until just a few days before his death, we were still recording our comments on DS9 episodes nearly every Saturday night, even from his hospital room. He was not only a very dear friend, but had become like a brother to me. The hole he left in my heart could never be filled. Since the anniversary of his passing was this June 1st, I thought I'd share it with you, since I know that you can empathize because of Brian, whom I still think about also. This quote from Spock, adapted from Diane Duane's The Wounded Sky, seems a most fitting epitaph. We are those who visit time, but belong to eternity. And to each of us comes a moment when that visit is done. For one of this company, our dear brother Matthias, the hour of that departure has been fulfilled, and we are met to bid him farewell. In his living and in his dying, he has conquered both life and death, and his mortal nature has put on immortality, bringing to pass the ancient words, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? Therefore, seeing that our brother Matthias has taken the universe unto himself, we commend his spirit to the night and to the stars from which he came, knowing that by so doing, the night shall never lack for starlight or our lives for our beloved brother's memory till time's end. I'd love for you to play the epitaph on your next podcast if you want to. Some of our episode comments are in my Dropbox, to which I'm including a link in the email. We originally did them for the Upper Pylon 2 podcast, but I'd love you to listen to them, and perhaps play one or two during your show, if you happen to cover the same episode at some point. I know that's what Matthias would want as well. Thanks for a wonderful podcast. Blessings always. Renee, a.k.a. Maress.
So, thank you, Renee, for that. And you're right. Okay, yeah, it's hard for me to do this, but I do think of Brian Baker a lot, like you said, and you know, I still miss him. So, but we have to go on. Life goes on. But I know he's watching. I know he's got us in his mind somewhere up there, wherever he's at.
You may be gone, but you will never be forgotten.
Greetings from Starbase 12. This is your resident android, Brian Baker.
Sean?
Yes, sir.
Let's go back to the chain of command.
The synopsis for tonight's show is Picard, Worf, and Dr. Crusher are reassigned from the Enterprise to a secret mission. Meanwhile, the Enterprise is under the command of Captain Edward Jellicoe, who immediately starts making changes, much to the dismay of the crew. This is the 10th episode of Season 6 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. The original release date was December 14th, 1992, and it was written by Frank Abedemarco, with teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, and directed by Robert Shearer. Guest stars include Ronnie Cox, as Captain Edward Jellicoe, Natalia Nagulovich as Admiral Alina Nechayev, David Warner as Gal Madred, John Durbin as Gal Lamech, Lou Wagner as Solok, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer, and finally Livingston as the soon-to-be-evicted lionfish.
Mm-hmm. get that fish out of the ready room.
So, guys, what do we think about this episode? I have to say it is one of my all-time favorites, not to give anything away beforehand, but every time I watch the episode or listen to a review of it on a different Star Trek review podcast, I still get goosebumps. Hmm. 25 years plus later, it's still an amazing episode. I can't say enough good things about it. Great acting, just overall one of my favorites.
Okay. All right, I'll go next. I find, and that, like you said, I do like this one as well. It's very interesting. I think part two is slightly better than part one.
Agreed.
But we'll get to that. I'm not sure I quite agree with the strike team that Nechayev puts together here. I don't exactly know. I guess Doctor has some metagenic, is that what it's called? Metagenic training or something, and she could do something with it. I don't know. But I still think that they probably could have found much, much more qualified people to do this job than the three. But as it is, we get to see them do their work. And, you know, what qualified them for this mission would be interesting. What was Worf's qualification? Because we all know he's a sucky security chief. But we'll see. Let's see.
What does James think?
Yeah, what James? What, James? 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 Yeah, tell us what you think, Papa.
So I think that, you know, only weeks out from losing the Enterprise to a bunch of Ferengi, mm-hmm. They clearly needed Worf to step up his game, and he was the obvious choice in this particular mission. Lou, you're actually going to watch it. If you're going to go down that route, you know, clearly both Picard, in particular, so Crusher and Worf were chosen because they were, you know, members of the crew. that's really it, and you didn't have to pay anyone else to turn up on the episode. Mm-hmm. But that's nitpicking, and we're not in for nitpicking, are we?
Where have you been?
I think this episode's great. And I really like the captain, Jellicoe. He's good, mm-hmm. and I think he actually shakes the crew up in a pretty good way. And I think he's supposed to be written as a bit of a bad guy in this show, but I don't really think he is. I really see where he's coming from on a lot of these issues. But yeah, I mean, this is just it's universally loved, right? No one really dislikes this episode.
No, I think you're right. And 25 years later, the debate still rages on, is Jellicoe a good captain or a bad guy? And you still get all kinds of opinions, the full spectrum.
No, that's not, surely not.
Oh, all the time.
He's a good guy.
Everybody hates him.
Who's?
Why?
He's mean to Riker. Come on, it's Riker.
Riker deserves it.
Riker, like another guy said, you know, he's getting soft aboard that luxury liner.
Yeah. Yeah. And he gets what? He gets Troy into her uniform, which I think is a good thing.
Because Riker's always been trying to get her out, and Jellicoe puts her back in, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's where they butted heads, and then they went their separate ways, right?
Exactly. That was the cause for all the confusion.
Hmm. Okay. So, the captain's log stardate is 46354.4, and we've arrived somewhere unimportant. It's not important where we arrived. For an urgent meeting with Vice Admiral Cupcake. Or I call her Blondie. Hottie. No. Gosh darn it. Nechayev. Does that sound Russian to you?
It sounds made up to me.
Ah, okay.
No, it's not made up.
Well, I mean, Guinan got a name from someone real. Who's Nechayev? Sounds Russian.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
But she ain't no Rusky. So, we're meeting with Admiral Nechayev for a very important meeting. Sounds like Picard might be up for a promotion. Nope. So the Admiral beams aboard, and the first thing she does is boot Riker out of the room. You're dismissed, Commander. Okay. So she's not here to promote Captain Picard. She's here to relieve him of Duty.
No.
And okay, the teaser.
I don't like the teaser. I think it's a silly teaser.
Why? Because you had to have been thinking, "Oh my God, what?"
No. It's too overly dramatized.
That was the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I used the word overly, and also too. So, no, but I didn't. I don't know. I didn't. And to me, I think they could have ended with something a little bit more exciting than
I think, what
do we actually believe that? Oh, look, Picard's lost command of the Enterprise. Isn't that terrible? I mean, that's obviously not going to happen. That's not the part of the story.
But I think what they're trying to do is instill a sense of drama, because they're making us all off kilter. Because what the heck is going on? Captain Picard is our captain. They can't relieve him of command. What the heck's happening? Oh, commercial. Now what the heck?
Mm. Well, we don't get the commercials here in the UK, so there's no commercial per se. Mm. All that there is that there's the space, the final frontier part.
Right.
Okay. So, time for a briefing. We come back from the commercials that you don't get over there. Time for a briefing. It would appear the Cardassians have whipped out their things for a Federation border pissing contest.
I didn't say war. I said incursion.
Oh, that's right. Incursion. Otherwise, I call it a pissing contest.
Or that.
If it's true, you know, the Federation has no hope, because I figure if the thickness and length of their Cardassian neck muscles are any indication, that I'd say the average Cardassian is packing a little bit more than humans are.
I'm not going to speculate.
Okay. Maybe if we get the guy who played Gul Dukat on the show sometime, we'll ask him that question. No, I won't. Okay, seriously. Okay, let's go back to the Cardassians. The Cardassians are ready for some, as you say, incursions into Federation space. No, damn it, not war incursions. Okay, we got that solved. It's the Federation flagship to meet the Cardassian high bastard, or high whatever, to begin talks and maybe show them that we mean business. But first, you have a new captain. And no, it's not Riker.
Okay, so a couple of things here. Firstly, I looked up Netchev to see whether or not it was Russian, because because there's something that happened with Russian surnames that maybe not a lot of people are familiar with, but you generally have masculine and feminine versions of the surname. And so, you know, when people watch like a Babylon 5, right, there's Ivanova on Babylon 5, there's a Russian surname.
Ivanova.
Is it Ivanova?
Susan Ivanova is how they say it.
Fine. But the actual surname of her dad would have been Ivanov. And her mum would have been an Ivanova, and her brother would have been an Ivanov, and her daughter would be an Ivanova, kind of thing. So okay. Masculine and feminine get different names. And it's usually that the feminine ends with an A. And I just did a quick Google, but yes, Nachev is indeed a Russian surname, but if you're female, you should be a Nachevva, not a Nachev.
Gotcha.
And why did they... Couldn't they fix that? What's wrong with these people?
In the future, we don't have masculine and feminine. It's just one.
Well, on Babylon 5, you did.
Well, yeah, so that's a different future timeline.
Mm-hmm. Alternate universe.
I suppose so. Anyway,
okay.
Away from that tangent, I really appreciate...
Sorry? Go ahead.
Okay, I really appreciate that the card gets sent on a mission, and they recognize that the flagship can't be put into Riker's command for an important mission. And this is one of the very, very few occasions where this has happened. In fact, off the top of my head, I can't think of another case where this has happened. You know, the normal procedure for Trek, and apparently for the Federation, for Starfleet, is that, you know, the captain goes somewhere, does something else, it goes to the first officer, he goes somewhere else, it goes to the second, third, fourth, and before you know it, Geordi's in charge. That can't possibly be the way to run Starfleet. So the idea of someone with experience coming in and actually taking over, to me it makes so much sense. It's kind of good that they do this.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we get Dick Jones.
Ah, that sounds like a...
like a RoboCop reference.
RoboCop reference, yes.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen... I didn't see the last RoboCop that they did with good old McCoy. Never saw that. I have only seen RoboCop, and I know how old I was when I saw RoboCop, because I had a weird childhood growing up, where I know that between 0 and 7 I was somewhere in one country, and then from 7 until 11 I was somewhere else, and then from 11 plus I was somewhere else. I know for a fact that I only watched RoboCop when I was 11 or below, and I haven't seen it since.
You don't watch it once a year at least?
No, but I kind of know that it's really quite gory. And
yeah,
and the only recollection or the only memories that I have is when I was under 11.
So, speaking of Russians, have you ever watched YouTube videos of Russian car accidents or Russian road rage?
No.
I mean, they're like hard as nails. Russians are like hard as nails. They can get in a high-speed accident, roll over 7 times, and jump out of that car with their arms in the air going, something like that. They're crazy. Some of their accidents are absolutely nuts.
Okay.
So, that's a tangent we'll get off of quickly. Captain Edward Jellicoe is our new captain.
He likes to give orders. He likes to get it done.
Get it done, Will.
I don't want to talk about it. I want it done.
Yes. Okay. I know you've been on a 3-shift rotation for the last 7 years. We're going to go on a 4-shift rotation in 4 hours. Get it done, Will.
Do you think that when you get promoted, to captain, do you think you have to write off to Starfleet and say, my catchphrase is going to be "Get it done"? Is it taken? And then they write back and say, "I'm sorry, but 'Get it taken' is already taken." Do you think they do this? It's like when you have to find like a decent Gmail address.
Oh, yes.
I just have this idea that, no one's ever kind of, all of the big captains haven't clashed with the Saiyans that they use. And in particular, I think the thing about Picard is that the "make it so" is such a oddly constructed sentence, in my mind at least. I don't know if other people, and the way you guys talk in North America, is that, no, "make it so." We use it every single day.
I have never, ever used it.
Yeah, really?
Really? I do.
I should. I was thinking about that the other day, actually, after watching this episode. I have to start saying "make it so," but I haven't.
The only reason I bring it up is that I do say it in jest and to wind people up, and will often, maybe use it with the wife and things like that in the bedroom, that kind of thing. Anyway, moving on.
I use it at work on the radio once in a while. What we have to do basically is we have to watch money. We have to watch things going around the casino. So we have to let security know when they can go into a certain door. We have to be with them, or not with them, but we have to watch them so they can't enter until we're ready. And a couple times I've said, "Make it so."
Nice.
Just to see if anybody could figure it out. Nobody has so far.
Mm.
But by the way, was it Janeway's one that was "do it"? Was that her?
"Do it." Yeah.
Or am I? Right.
Yes, it was.
And of course, Captain Pike is "hit it."
"Punch it."
"Punch it," or is it "hit it" or is it "punch it"?
"Punch it."
Well, "punch it" is Pike in, what's that? Pike in the 09 world.
Hmm.
Ah.
But that's when he wants people to engage, right? That's more of the engage.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not as if it's his number one officer doesn't come up to him and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, we're not going to, we're going to have to open disciplinary actions against the chief engineer because he was caught drunk on duty." He's not going to say "punch it."
Right.
It might be misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. "Punch it." Data says, "What was that for?" Okay. Anyway,
"Get it done."
"Get her done."
"Get it done."
Or "get her done." "Get her done." Captain Jellicoe comes on board, and I instantly like him. Actually, I instantly liked him. He is an absolute spitfire. Walk in, sling out commands, chew everybody up, spit them out, and send them on their way to create a 4-shift rotation. Where do the extra bodies come from?
Well, you still have the same amount of work. So it's just that instead of doing like 4 lots of 8 hours, you do like 5 lots of 6 hours.
He'd have to take hundreds of people and realign them to a new way of doing it.
That's, well, possibly thousands of people.
Right, thousands. Well, I mean, there's only 1,000 on board, but I mean, some are not going to be... Well, you're right. Every department's going to have... you're right, could be... hundreds and hundreds of people have to be realigned. And here's the thing. You know, do they get 2 days off a week like we normally would? Now that they're going to have to do six-hour shifts instead of eight-hour shifts, you may think that they do 2 hours a day less. That ain't going to be so. Unless they have an alternating, rotating schedule, there's no way the same amount of bodies can to do a four-shift rotation as they did a three.
So what I would have loved Riker to have done at this stage is that he should have turned to the captain and said, I'm sorry, Captain, we're going to have to obviously bring up this change in working conditions to our local union representative. We'll get back to you in 6 to 12 months' time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And what's really funny is that, you know, Riker is a good first officer to our liking, to our conditions for the Enterprise. But he sucks when he's under Jellicoe. At least that's what Jellicoe thinks.
Well, actually, he doesn't have a very good relationship with Jellicoe, right? And to be honest with you, I think he whines a bit too much. Look, there is going to be a bit of a change, and he's obviously on the back foot, and the new captain's asking him to do stuff that's different. But when you look at Data and Geordi, they kind of behave fine. And even Troi, who gets a bit of a dressing down in terms of her uniform and, you know, told to change, she doesn't go around whining about it.
She was grateful.
Yeah, well, I think from the character's perspective, she just seemed to take it, you know, accept it and kind of move on. I personally, I've never been a very big Riker fan, and I just don't... I think him kind of being used as the portrayal of, oh, this person's coming in for external and there's a bit of conflict here, and, you know, he's asking us to do stuff that on paper seems perfectly reasonable. Now, it might not have been what Picard wanted, but it's still perfectly reasonable. I don't think he's not putting people at risk. He's not being reckless.
So let me get this straight. You've never liked Riker?
No, I've always hated Riker.
What?
Hmm.
Everything I learned about love, I learned from Riker.
So actually, maybe I should rephrase. I think when I was watching Trek for the first time, I always thought that Picard was boring, and I always thought that obviously Riker was more of a, you know, he's more hands-on, right? But fundamentally, he's written to be more hands-on, and Picard has to be written on the ship to do boring stuff. But ever since probably my, you know, getting deep into Trek. Because I remember watching Best of Both Worlds and thinking, good, they're going to kill off Picard and Riker will be able to replace him. That will be the way forward. But since probably around 15-16, when I kind of started watching it in depth, I have just come to the conclusion that I don't like Riker very much. Picard's a great captain. And the other one that I sometimes get a bit of slack on is Troi is way out of Riker's league.
Oh, and yes.
What she's doing with Riker, I have no idea. I think, you know, come on, let's just be real here.
I think Riker is the most relatable character on the show.
What, more so than O'Brien?
Yeah, because O'Brien is smart and he can fix things. Riker's just a do-do-do-do-yo, okay, yes, sir, whatever, let's get this done kind of guy. He doesn't have any skill set in particular, so he's more relatable.
Well, I like the way he says, shields up, red alert!
Anyway. Yeah,
I always watch it. The thing about Riker is that I never liked the fact that when Picard would say, fire at will, they rarely did.
That's true. They never do.
What?
There's a pun there, just in case anyone's confused. There's a pun.
Oh, I caught it.
Good. We all got the pun, but I was thinking there should be at least an outtake when you hear fire at will. You go, what? Why? What?
What did I do?
What? Why? Whoa, put it down, Worf. What? Let's talk about this. Okay. All right, so the changing of the command ceremony. And like they said, you know, they don't normally do this if it's temporary, so...
But they should. They really should.
It sure feels real.
Yep. And actually, it builds... Look, the reason why you wouldn't do it is if the change of command is actually not going to be significant, and it's not going to play into the storytelling, and it's going to be reverted with certainty within the next 40 minutes. So the fact that they're actually doing it, it tells the crew that you're in for the long haul, which means that when Riker moans and stuff, he's not really going to be getting very far. But also it tells the audience, right, that at least for this two-part episode, that things are probably going to be different. And it at least puts a question mark over the future of certain of the character relationships. And as a result, I think it's a good way to put down a marker that things might be different. Especially nowadays, right, it's not that unusual for big significant events to happen in television or in television like programs that get streamed, whereas back in the early 90s, when you're in syndication in particular, you're not going to be shaking up the series by removing half the cast. It's just not something that happens. But I thought this allowed the audience to at least recognize that something significant was happening, and at least puts a question mark over the future.
Hmm. I like it.
Okay. All right. So do you think about three episodes ago when the Ferengi took over the ship, they had the changing of the command ceremony?
Yes.
USS Enterprise, now under the command of, I don't know, some Ferengi name. Okay. I go out relieved, far. I stand relieved, you bastard. So the doctor is sore. Oh, my goodness. Ow. Oh, sorry, I can't talk about it. Why? Why is it such a secret mission?
But also, what exactly would they want to hear about? Because Crush doesn't even know where they're going or what the mission's about yet, right? Yeah. She only finds out on the shuttle.
Right.
So, using your imagination, what exactly are the possibilities here? Because it's not going to be like, oh, us three, we've been invited to perform at the, annual Federation circus ceremony, and as a result, we have to get our fitness levels up. I mean, that's not happening.
No, so, but they got she could pretty much figure something out. It's about the Cardassians. It's in this cave that we keep going through. He doesn't even change up the cave. So now we know it's a Cardassian cave that Cardassians are going to be guarding. So it's something to do with them that we have to encroach something on them. I think she has to be able to figure something out.
Do you think they should have used Cardassians in the simulation, or do you think they should have thrown a swerve ball and used Borg or
No, what they should have done was that the green Skeletor guy from Worf's programs.
yes. Yeah, those guys.
That one.
And then it would allow them in the shuttle to at least then when they mention that we're going to Cardassia or Cardassian space, it's at least we're not going to Skeletor's planet.
That's it.
That's a relief.
Okay. Okay, so a little... I don't know if I've skipped over anything here.
We just know that nobody's impressed with anyone and there's no time for chances. We got to get it done.
Get it done, Will. Do you think Data probably could have came up with a better force shift rotation before Riker could have?
Guaranteed.
So I think maybe, commands can flow downhill. Do you remember the first time we engaged the Borg in the Delta Quadrant?
Yeah, System J25. It was great.
Yes, and they were all in engineering. As the Borg was trying to gain access to the computer, Picard says, "Mr. Worf," who then says, "Ensign." and then this poor nothing guy walks up and tries to stop him and gets his ass kicked. Why couldn't he have done that here?
Sound, look, if you're forgetting. He gets himself knocked back, and then he sends the next guy, doesn't he?
No, they just start firing on him.
Oh, I thought they sent two guys.
No.
Did they not?
Just one.
I've got a
I've got a false memory there, because I thought they sent two guys to sort out the Borg.
I don't recall. Once the first guy got thrown about 75 feet or something.
Yeah.
No, I think they just went to phasers.
Well, you know, if we went back 18 years in the podcast archives, we could listen to your episode about that. We could.
Right. Yeah. Was it that long ago? I think it was only like 14.
Oh, maybe 13 14.
13 or 14.
Yeah.
All right. Actually, you know, this funny is this is our my 10th year doing a podcast about Star Trek, so.
Oh, funny.
Never saw it. Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Never saw it happening back then, either.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, so after the ceremony and on the shuttle, we get a little more information. They're going into an installation. However, well, actually, it was not on the shuttle. Excuse me. It was still in 10 forward there. However, the information, you know, the blueprints we have is 2 years old. Oh, I don't know how JF ever talked you into this. Yeah, she said pretty please, didn't she?
She didn't give me much choice.
It didn't give him much choice. That's what she said, pretty please. So Jellicoe decides to send a Class 5 probe before they reach the border. And since it's on Delta Shift, we're going to let Delta Shift know to send that. Oh, well, you know, I was going to talk to you about that. Gamma Shift will be on in 2 hours, not Delta. God damn it, Will. Is there a problem with Delta? Well, since you gave me the order, you know, 25 minutes ago, there is no Delta yet. But, yeah, I just don't get it. I don't see the whole purpose of it. I mean, does he want his people to sleep more and give him a six-hour shift instead of eight?
He just needs to throw his weight around and make things happen.
That's right. Okay, so this is where I think Data should have been very helpful, because they need to refit the entire schedule in 2 hours. Don't talk about it. Get it done. So, anyway. Oh, and then, and get the fish out of the ready room. Why? What's wrong with the fish? What Livingston do?
Well, I assume he just doesn't want to feed it.
Maybe. You don't think the tank has an automatic feeder?
I doubt they have. They been invented yet? But the 24th century?
Oh, I'm sure they have. It's in the tank somewhere. It just drops down food twice a day or once a day in the exact perfect amount.
It replicates it, I assume.
I heard that Livingston was actually a hologram, not a real fish.
Oh, you think?
That's what I was told, but I don't know if it's true.
I don't know. I did, you know, because when they said something about the fish, I thought, I wonder if the fish, what kind of fish it was. And we found out it was a lionfish named Livingston, so that's pretty cool. I had to go into the show notes, you know.
Of course.
So, Jellicoe wanted to refit the engines, didn't he?
Probably.
So, the engineering crew has to work every hand on deck for the next 2 days, no rest.
Well, then you better get started.
Yep, you better get on it now then, Jordy. I'll be in my ready room, or I'll be in my quarters taking a nap. So long, sucker. So, now, somebody's got... That's it, something's got to give. Somebody has to talk to him. How about Deanna? Because she's so sweet and friendly. So, you know, I just wanted to talk about how everybody is handling the change in command and how it's affecting the crew. You're right. But you know, I don't have a time to hold the hand of the crew. Get it done! Oh, and go get some regular clothes on, thank you. Any comments on that stuff?
No, it was a good idea. I never did like that outfit she was wearing.
It was always lopsided.
But this actually makes sense, right, well, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So Troy is a counselor who's there for the general kind of, you know, let's say morale or mental health or whatever, you know, more soft workings of the crew. She comes along and she says, look, hey, Captain, people aren't quite reacting. And he's basically told her, well, do what you need to do to make sure it's not an issue. Now, I assume that many people might have been thinking that, no, maybe he has to become softer or not.
But when you have an organization, you've got used to like the leadership of that organization. It's not very often that it's the person that comes in that has to change. It's really the organization that will change. So I'm kind of with Jellicoe on this.
Okay.
And blue is her color, so it's perfect.
Actually, blue works. Blue works for her.
Yeah, it did. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, she looked very cute in the uniform. We never really understood why she was out of the uniform anyway. She is a commissioned officer. I mean, now, isn't she now a commander since she took the commander's test?
I believe so.
No, she hasn't taken the commander's test yet.
Yeah?
Not at this point?
No, she doesn't in season. She doesn't in Thine Own Self in season 7.
Right. Yes, the one where Data loses his mind. Yes,
Mr. Radioactive.
Yes.
Imagine that. He loses his mind again. Okay. So Picard even tries to give Jellicoe a little advice, and basically, Jellicoe tells him to f off. It's my ride now.
That's it.
Yeah. Take a hike, saw. Oh, and take this stupid book. You know, the one about Shakespeare? Ooh. Picard, I think this is yours. Yeah.
How rude.
Oh, and your fish are somewhere on deck 5 in a lab. Alright, so the crackpot crew are on their mission. Here we are. Now let's talk about it. Starfleet believes the Cardassians are developing a metagenic weapon.
Those were outlawed.
Oh, that's crazy. I don't know what it's all about, but I did a Google search on metagenics, and do you believe it's real?
No, is it?
Yeah, metagenics.com. It says our genes are not our destiny, they're our greatest opportunity. And their tagline is genetic potential through nutrition.
Oh, God.
To be clear, I mean, this is something that's probably been registered since the episode was written.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure the episode came first.
I would imagine so.
I would think so too, but there is, if you want to go to metagenics.com, there is an actual website called Metagenics, and you know it's genetic potential through nutrition. So I mean, what's the big deal about nutrition? Cardassians are developing nutritional supplements or something. What's wrong with that?
I'm going to check it out right now.
Okay, metagenics.com. Yep. Here, I'll just put a link right here in this little box.
Your oath to healthcare, your oath to the world. Practitioner exclusive supplements and services.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very interesting. All kinds of pills in a DNA strand picture.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So what is a Cardassian doing wrong?
I'm just trying to make you more healthy.
Okay, actually. In the 24th century, however, metagenics are genetically mutated viruses that are engineered to destroy an entire ecosystem. Oh. They mutate and seek out all forms of DNA they encounter, and then the metagenic breaks down and goes away so that anybody can come right along and take the planet. Can you say, Genesis?
That sounds way worse than this website you found.
Yeah, way worse. So obviously these people, they probably have really bad things going on in the 24th century.
If you can't trust a Cardassian, who can you trust?
That's right. Genesis is forbidden. Planet forbidden. Anyway. So we're going to Soltress 3 to find out if the Cardassians have a secret research lab under the planet. And if they do, destroy it at all costs.
Seems like an easy task.
Yeah. Do you remember Tomalak and their planet that may have been the military base that may have been cloaked, and the only way we'll ever find out is by going to Nelvana 3?
Well, of course we remember Tomalak. He was the guy who played Jakar in Babylon 5.
Oh, did he?
He did. Andreas Katsalas.
Yes. Yes, hopefully, and I think we do see him again, don't we?
Two or three times.
Really?
We see Tomalak in the very final episode of Star Trek, Next Generation.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Are we just going to sit here and stare at each other? Anyway. So, Picard has experience in using a radio, and that could be used to help generate metagenic waves, so I think that's why he's there. Worf, his presence is obvious. That's all they say.
It wasn't to me. Obvious. It wasn't to me.
I don't have a clue. How's that? I don't know. Don't press that button. So here's what we have to do. We have to allow the shuttle to get stolen. We're all going to get captured, but you do your best. Okay? And the doctor, locate and destroy any biotoxins they find. And considering her track record as a doctor...
What could go wrong?
Worf as a security chief? I'd say this whole mission is pretty damn screwed. Hey, that's okay. There are five lights. Okay, let's see.
It was good, though, to have Picard on an away mission. Or, you know, kind of an away mission. But you know, it's not that usual, right?
Action Picard, with Kung Action. Fu grip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
Mm-hmm. So first they have to find this Ferengi. This low-level nothing Ferengi. To get information for Daemon something. Sulok? Was it?
Yeah, that's what it says in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, I don't have him with me. Oh, there it is, right there. Yeah, Sulok. Lou Wagner. Really? Anyway, Lou Wagner, the reason I know that name is he played on Chips. He was the mechanic Harlan on the 70s show Chips.
Michael Dorn was on that.
Yes, he played Jedediah Turner. Yes, that is interesting. So let's see here. Watching the doctor performing Umox on the Ferengi was kind of cool, actually. Little did she know, she was pretty much having sex with that Ferengi.
So, what did you use to describe that?
Umox.
No. You said it was pretty... Was it pretty cool?
Yeah, watching Dr. She was an expert at giving Umox.
I thought it was a bit creepy, to be honest. And a part of me thought... Have they fully defined what she's doing here yet?
No.
So is it, you know, we know later what this kind of thing has become, but is she basically just arousing him in public?
She's just stroking his ear. She probably doesn't know. They don't know anything about it by then. Probably because of what she does with his ears, the reason they came up with Umox in the future. My guess. Okay, so anyway, she's trying to charm him. And it works. So the A-Team arrives to the Cave of Wonders. Cave of Wonders! Anyway. And would you believe there's nothing there so far? Well, except for Cardassian bats and... Oh my god. Worf is afraid of a bat. What a warrior.
He's my hero.
Yes.
Bats. I don't like bats.
Okay. Adobe Acrobat Reader was just updated successfully. Thank you very much for that. Okay. So the Cardassian Gull has arrived to the Enterprise to discuss what's going on. And is waiting in the observation lounge. Angelica's just going to make him wait for a while. I like that. Do you guys agree with that? Let him stew for a while?
It's got to be a PowerPoint position.
Uh-huh. And then he's going to walk in, piss him off, and walk out. But then Riker's got to go back in and pretend like, you know, Jellicle's pissed. He's pissed. He wants to eject you off the nearest airlock. I could try and talk to him, but you got to be a little more reasonable.
Good cop, bad cop, yeah.
Yep, good cop, bad cop. So it's now time to talk to the Gull. Or not. It's in Sodom, walk out and make him wait again, as I said. Meanwhile, back on the planet, the A-Team, as I call them, I don't know, who's who? Who's going to be Face and Murdoch and, I can't think of their names. Never mind.
Yeah, let's move on. I've never watched that show.
Oh, really? You didn't miss anything.
Okay, phew.
Yeah, it was stupid. Most of the 70s shows were stupid. So they make it to the bottom of the cave and happens to notice, guess what? There's only one way back up. Yeah. Couldn't they have repellers? I mean, don't you think in the 24th century, they could have this device that would have let them down slowly and then brought them back up?
I would imagine.
But no, can't do that. It's more interesting to have to make them walk up, but we never get to see that. That I was cheated on.
Rip off,
yep. So they continue on with the mission, arrive at the destination, that is after rocks fall on Dr. Crusher, and what do they find? It's a trap! Let's go! Of course, Cardassians arrive, Picard gets trapped, Crusher and Worf have to leave him. We don't even know if they survived, for a while at least. And then Captain Picard finds himself in an interrogation, or should I say, torture chamber.
He's an interesting challenge.
You are most interesting that have walked through those doors in many years. But that comes next week.
So I'm a bit confused.
Over a lot of stuff?
Did they just have this guy on the planet for no reason at all? I mean, why has he got his torture chamber there?
It's on a ship.
Oh, it's on the ship already.
Yeah. The torture takes place on a ship somewhere.
Ah, that.
It does?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were still on the planet.
Remember, because in the next episode, when they detonate the minefield, the ship rocks.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they're all in the nebula somewhere.
Okay, so did I skip over a lot?
No. You did good.
It was just after they've captured Picard, they obviously took him away. Yeah. I'm surprised that they weren't able to like find out that it was a trap before they literally walked through the door, and then they realized it was a trap like instantly. Because if you're able to obfuscate stuff for like a sensor not to be able to pick it up, or for people with probes and stuff. But you would imagine once you've landed on the planet, you would be able to do a little bit better at ascertaining whether it's real or not.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have a second episode.
No, I understand that.
No, they got out. But do you think they trained for... It's a trap!
No. I imagine they were practicing that in the shuttle on the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Okay, then. That's a pretty quick show. That's probably one of the quickest ones we've done in a long time.
Oh, but wait, there's more for next week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. There is. Next week, guys. Okay, then. If I didn't skip over too much, then it's time for our final thoughts and ratings. Did I hear a hang-on coming out?
No, so I thought you were going to go straight over and join us next week, but I assumed we were doing final thoughts and ratings on a kind of per episode rather than per
two-part. You want to do the and then we'll give a final rating for the whole shebang. But now it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst. What's wrong with you people? And 5 being the best. And Sean, you're our guest, so why don't you try?
I can try that. Final thoughts and ratings. Well, I didn't write anything down, but I do think this is one of the better episodes of Star Trek, The Next Generation. And I have to think that all the acting was really good. We get a lot of strong reactions due to the Jellicoe character. And it's a great setup for the second part. And like you said at the beginning of our chat here, not quite as good as part 2. So I am going to give this 4 out of 5 lights.
Okay. All right, then I'll go next. It is a good episode. It's not bad at all. I do, like you say, we're going to enjoy next week a little bit better when we try and determine how many lights there are. But to me, the only problem I have is it makes no sense how these three could have possibly been the best people for the job. I'm sure the Federation's got crazy way overskilled mercenaries if they need them. Even Section 31 could have gotten in and out without no one ever knowing.
Exactly, and they could have used Picard because of his experience with metagenics, but they brought Jellicoe over, so they could have brought a whole crack team to come in with Picard, and like a better medical person with more tactical training, another commando or two to help along, defeat the bad guys. You know, they could have done a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But they had to use the three main cast members, so they didn't have to pay anybody else. So we have to forgive them that.
Yeah, I guess. So anyway, I don't know if it would have been a better episode had we gotten strangers that we don't know, but we're invested in the three, so therefore it's probably better. In the end, it's probably better. But still, it's a good episode. Do you ever wonder, one thing we didn't touch on, how many people on the ship put in for transfers after Jellicoe took over?
47.
47. That's funny. Okay. In the end, it's pretty good, and it builds up to a very awesome episode. So I'm going to give Chain of Command Part 1 three lights as well. No! I'm sorry. No, four lights. Why did I say three? It says four. Four. Four lights! Doc, how about you?
No, there are five lights here. I prefer the first episode than the second.
Seriously?
I really enjoyed the first. I think that, very often the first part kind of builds up, and then the second part obviously has to resolve. And, some famous episodes have had things built up to the extent that any resolution has to be, falling down. I don't think that happens in Chain of Command, per se. I think that the episodes are very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the second episode is very, the story that you have from Picard's side is very unique, and it is pretty much divorced from the ongoing shenanigans on the Enterprise and the like. But I really enjoyed the new captain coming in, taking over, what his vision was. I thought the interactions with the crew that he had were very valid and very kind of real life like. I love the fact that it's someone else coming in rather than just Riker taking over kind of thing that would have typically happened prior to this. I understand Lou's point about why Crusher. Well, it is what it is. This is what happens when you do TV. I do think another problem that they have when three people from the same ship disappear is that people are going to notice those three people disappearing. Mm-hmm. So you should probably keep it a little bit quieter than just taking, half the senior crew of the Enterprise and putting them into a shuttle, right? But no, I really enjoy this episode. I kind of think it builds up the story very, very well, and I don't think the second part kind of disappoints. But I kind of really like I really like what they are trying to do, and in terms of world building, it just seems to be much more kind of much more planted in reality than typical two parters. I also didn't necessarily see the switch coming, right? What I mean by the switch, I mean the end of the episode. So maybe this is a problem with me, but in many cases when you have a two-parter, you kind of see that you're building towards a big event, and then you put a to be continued just before that big event. And I kind of feel that on this episode, you don't have this build towards that big event. The event that occurs is that the crew gets captured. But I never felt that was telegraphed to the extent that that you knew where exactly this first episode was going to finish and cut. Whereas I think other two-parters often have that. Certainly if you're like building up to a climax of a big battle, you might decide to cut just before the episode. So I kind of felt that this episode went, for what it was trying to do, it worked very nicely. It ended on a nice cliffhanger. I didn't feel cheated in any way. And And the storytelling really does take a sharp turn next week when you get into the relationship between the prisoner and torturer. I'm rambling now. I like the episode. 5 out of 5 lights. Although, if I acknowledge it's 5 lights, does that make me a bad person that succumbed to torture?
Find out next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll find out next week. All right, so, I don't know, Sean, are you sure you're going to be able to make it next week?
I think I should be okay.
You sure? I don't want to put you out, man. I mean, you have to come back here real soon. And
I know.
Okay. Then you're asking for it, buddy.
Clearly.
Held captive as a prisoner of war, Picard must endure the cruelest punishment imaginable.
We cannot just abandon him. He's gone.
Will torture leave him a forgotten casualty of war?
I can't believe you're willing to sacrifice Captain Picard's life as a negotiation tactic.
Are you questioning my judgment, Commander?
Or can he survive the most brutal test of courage in his life?
You cannot hurt me!
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, so everybody, join us next time as we review episode 11 of Star Trek The Next Generation. And that is Chain of Command Part 2, and we might have Sean from the Rusted Robot. The Rusted Robot might be on, it might not, we don't know. So we'll find out then. Sean, thanks for coming on, buddy.
My pleasure.
We've missed you.
It's been too long.
It has, but the good thing is you'll be back sooner than later.
Indeed.
All right, take care and good night, everyone.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Lady night. Okay.
Now, do you this think is where you cut the episode, blah, 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 blah. I fully expect this to be in.
Yeah. Sometimes I do actually leave the stuff in as it fades out just to
have a little
fun with people. Yes, I do. I let it stay in. I could take that out, but it's funnier that way. Us just talking back and forth as it fades out.
Okay, good.